Welcome to the Recovering Nice Guy Podcast. This is the place for nice guys who are ready to kick the habit of people-pleasing and ditch those self-sabotaging behaviors for good. Now, here's your host, me, Chuck Chapman. Your mood determines your quality of life. And one of the things that I've noticed about the men that I work with is they exist in what I call this neutral state. They don't really experience highs or lows. They're just numb. And living in a world like this can only be described as quiet desperation. But what if I told you there is a path out of this lower state, out of the lower mood into a higher mood? What if I told you you can actually choose your mood? And by living in a good mood, guess what? Your quality of life is going to improve exponentially. Today, I have an expert on good moods with me. His name is Matt O'Neill, and he is on a mission to help people shift into good moods. In fact, he's the host of the highly popular podcast, The Good Mood Show. Welcome, Matt.
Oh, man. Thank you so much for having me, Chuck. What an intro.
Yeah, I'm excited. You and I got to have a little bit of a conversation on your podcast, and it was so good. I was like, I got to get this guy on my podcast.
Oh, man, we are kindred spirits. Your language and my language are synonymous, and I totally agree with you about, we mute down our moods so much because we don't want to stand out. Like, we just want to, if we could just tiptoe through life and not have anyone notice us, then we could just get all the way to our grave and never have, like, been out of line. Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah. And I think that's so much of, like, the guys that I talk to, especially, you know, they don't like the tension of being in the spotlight necessarily. You know, they want to have a problem-free, smooth life. And
if you're happy all the time, if you're smiling and if you're happy and if you're enjoying yourself, like, that, you are going to stand out because it's not normal. You know, being muted is normal. People saying, how you doing? And you're saying, oh, I'm doing okay. I'm hanging in there. You know, I'm getting by. That's normal. But all of that sucks. Like, your life just isn't great. It's okay. It's just getting by. I'm just hanging in there. Well, that's not a way to live, man. Like, let's go ahead and enjoy our life. And to do that, you might get looked at. You might draw a little attention to yourself because everybody else isn't feeling great. But let's go ahead and feel great. Mm-hmm.
You know, you just hit on something important. And I think that is, you know, when we stand out, we're actually leading. And one of the things I'm teaching in my podcast and the work that I do with men is how to lead in their life, right? And, you know, I'm sure you're familiar with, there's this thing called mirror neurons. So if I'm in a good mood, that gets contagious. If I'm in a bad mood, that's also contagious. So if I'm leading in my life and I meet somebody and they, how's your day going? I'm like, fine. Their mirror neurons are going to reflect back to me. But if I'm like, I'm having a great day, man, how are you? That's also going to reflect, and that's going to bring them up out of their mood.
Yeah, that's a little good mood tip is come up with really fun answers to that how's it going question.
I like that. Tell me.
I love saying magnificent. Like, man, you're going to surprise someone. I'll also say it's super fantastic today. And people are like, whoa, man, what's happening? You're having a great day. And I'm like, heck yeah, I am. This might be the best day of my life. Oh, because why not? Right? It might just be the very, and if you're not going to have the best day of your life if you're not always trying to create it. So let's go ahead and create it. We only get so many days.
That's so true. And it's really easy to forget about that and to you know, think like I've got, you know, all the time in the world when really,
what if we got a week left?
So fragile.
Yeah. What if we got a week left?
I'd probably be running around going, I'm going to die.
That would be super fun. But if we did, I'd certainly want to enjoy the last I get here.
Yeah.
And I definitely want to enjoy the time I have with other people. Like, I think that, I love that you said when you're in a good mood, you're leading. And these mirror neurons are such an important piece of all of it because it's really down to survival. So if we didn't fit in with the tribe, they could kick us out.
Exactly.
And if we were on our own in the jungle, man, we're probably going to die. So fitting in with what everyone else is doing is a very primal thing that I need to act like everyone else is acting. That's why we don't want to be in a super good mood and have people like look at us like, man, that's fake. What's that guy doing? Like, that's not real. It doesn't even matter what other people think if you're yourself just feeling good internally.
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. Now, I know you talk about strategies. All right. So what are some strategies? And specifically, I think one of the things, you know, moods are oftentimes things we sort of move in and out of. You know, I'm in a bad mood, I'm in a good mood, I'm in a neutral mood or something like that. But how do you teach or coach people to be able to stay and maintain being in a good mood?
Man, it is, happiness is a perspective. And, you know, life, the events in life don't have any meaning except for the meaning that we choose to assign to them. So typically, before we understand this, like fully understand this, something happens that we didn't want to have happen. And then we're like, we're thrown sideways and we're in a bad mood, and rightfully so. Like maybe somebody betrayed us. That hurts. Maybe somebody harmed us intentionally. That hurts. Maybe we got injured physically. You know, that all these news pieces, we get this news all day. And if we just let our normal first reaction govern what happens next, we're going to be in a bad mood a lot, because the thing is, we always want the world to go exactly the way we want it to go.
Right.
I want everyone to behave. I want all 7 billion people to behave exactly the way I think they should behave. I want everything in my body to go exactly the way I think it should go. I want the weather to be the way I want it should be. Like, we can't control any of this stuff. Mm-hmm. So as we're trying to control the world and getting into a bad mood when it's not the way we think it should, that's just a recipe for always being in a bad mood. So to become in a good mood, of course, things are still going to throw me sideways. They sure do. It's just, how quickly can I shift my perspective back to a positive view of this exact same situation? So this, to me, there's a few very easy strategies. And the first one is having a daily conversation with myself in my journal. Hmm. So every morning, I make my coffee, because, you know, coffee puts me in a good mood. I drink a little water to get some hydration. And then I sit down with my cup of coffee and a journal, and I have a conversation with myself. And I'm asking myself specifically, how am I feeling? What's on my mind right now that's bothering me? Is there anything challenging going on? And as I write it down, usually when you write down a problem, half of the solution is already there. So as I write down anything that's challenging, I'm thinking, is there a different way I can look at this? You know, one of the other things I do with my journal every day is I start with 3 things I did really well the day before. I say, hey, where are 3 ways I succeeded yesterday? Because a lot of times our brains will focus on everything we're not doing well enough, what we need to get done today, how we're going to get ahead. And it's always like looking at the gap. Hey, I want you to be here, but you're here. Well, when I start to look at the opposite, well, where am I doing super well? Every single day, I write down 3 things I did well the day before. I'm stacking wins. And then I start to feel good that, hey, I'm already where I should be right now.
That's great. Yeah. I think that, you know, you hit that. And one of the things I often talk about is expectations, and expectations are just resentments waiting to be born. So if I have an expectation for 7 billion people to, you know, agree with me and do things the way that I think they should be done, or even if it's just, I expect my wife to do that or my kids to do that, and they don't meet that expectation, what I'm going to have is a resentment, and that resentment then shifts you out of that good mood state into a lower bad mood state. So yeah, that's great. And I love the idea of perspective and journaling in the morning, you know, and writing down some things that are solid wins. I think that's a great strategy. Are there any other things you do?
Yeah. So my journal, sitting down with my journal is the foundation of how I'm going to be working on my perspective, because there's so many things that happen throughout a day that, you know, the next day you can wake up in a funk, like, and you don't even know why, unless you are consciously looking at how did I interpret all the events from the day before. And so my, the journal practice does start out with my journal's got 1, 2, 3 written on it. And you could just grab a piece of paper and write 1, 2, 3. And I write down 3 instances the day before I did something well. And they can be small, and they always are. Like, man, I went to the gym yesterday and my buddy Adam was there and we did a really hard workout together. That was a big win yesterday.
Yeah.
You know, and then last night was talent show. And so we went to the talent show and I got to watch my my 6-year-old and my 8-year-old perform on stage. And it was just amazing, right? So I'm recounting like how great my life is. And of course, things went wrong yesterday too, but I start out with what went right yesterday. Then the next thing I do is I write down 3 things that are new that I'm grateful for. So I write down on a piece of paper, first I write down the words, I'm grateful. And then for me, I put my hand on my heart and I close my eyes and I actually think, what am I really grateful for? Like in my heart. And then I write down 3 new things, not the same thing. Like I'm not just, I'm grateful for my health. I'm grateful for my wife. I'm grateful for my children. That's not going to help me. I need my brain to keep thinking about what are the new things that I'm grateful for right now. And then from that moment, if there is something challenging, I'm going to take the time to just write it down and say, how am I choosing to view this situation? You had said in the intro, you know, we don't want to be a victim.
Yeah.
Anytime I feel like a victim, I'm suffering. And sometimes we are victimized, right? Sometimes people do hurt us and we have every right to feel like a victim. But anytime I choose to feel like a victim, I'm going to suffer. And so I ask myself, am I feeling like a victim here? Because if it's someone else's problem that hurt me, then someone else has to come fix it. Mm. And that's not going to be my truth. If somebody hurt me, but I take ownership of, hey, I had some responsibility in this situation. I let that person in my life, or I could have done something differently. Or even if I couldn't have, right now it's my responsibility to do something. I take my power back and I now can be in control of what I'm going to do today.
Yeah, that's a great point of like taking your power, you know, because if you're in a bad mood, you're disempowered, you're letting somebody else's circumstances control you, right? But if you're taking your power, right, and you're making a conscious, willful choice of, I'm going to choose to focus on, you know, the positive. And it reminds me of, you know, Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning, you know, and, the, you know, here's a guy that's in the concentration camps in Germany during World War II, and he found purpose and meaning in that. And if you find purpose and meaning in that state, you should be able to find purpose and meaning if, you know, the dog pees on the carpet, right?
I think about that book all the time. You know, it was really, that's the ultimate victim. This is a doctor of psychology who had written a manuscript for his first book. His wife was taken to the concentration camp. His parents were taken to the concentration camp. His brother was taken to the concentration camp. All the people he loved most were killed unfairly, just because of their color of their skin, where they grew up, the religion they practiced, like completely like a total victim. Mm-hmm. None of this is fair. He didn't do anything to deserve this. Yeah. And yet everything was taken from him except for one thing. He said, the only thing they can't take from me is my choice of my thoughts. And this is his perspective. So he chose to see his perspective in that concentration camp as an opportunity for him to look at the nature of human beings and then republish his manuscript from everything that he learned about how his mind was stronger than his situation. And it's crazy powerful. That book has had such a big impact in my life.
Yeah, me too. In fact, it was the first book I ever read on psychology. I remember, I think I was in high school and I found a copy of it in my dad's collection, and it just was like interesting. I started reading it and then I kind of put it down. And really one of the things I sort of point to when I think about my own path of becoming a helper and a counselor and a coach was the influence of that book. So I'm glad you brought those points out.
You know, and I know integrity is a big word for you, and it is for me too. So one of the keys to being in good moods is being a person that you admire. Mm. And how do you do that? Well, I read the book Good to Great years ago, maybe 20 years ago. And in the book, Good to Great, Jim Collins said, the best organizations have a culture driven by five core values. No more than five. Just they can't police the thousands of people that work there. But if they create a culture that, hey, if you exhibit these five things and you behave by these five things, they guide all your decisions, we're probably going to be in pretty good shape. So I created five core values for my young company after I read that book. The first one being integrity, meaning, you know, I'm going to treat people honestly and fairly and do what we say we're going to do. The next core value was kindness. I'm going to treat people with kindness. Well, as I started to hire people around me that dealt with integrity and worked with kindness, and then we acted that way, we felt really admirable about the work we were doing. And this is a key to feeling good. Anytime you would break things that mean, you know, if I would break my integrity, if I would harm one of my clients for my own gain, I wouldn't be in a good mood. There'd be guilt that would accrue in my subconscious. And then I would like always be worried about, oh, this success is good, but what if the other shoe drops? Well, that feeling that, hey, things are getting good, but I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop, it goes away when you define your core values and then you live by them, because you know there's no need for a shoe to drop. There's no shoe to even drop. You've been living your life according to the way that you see is admirable, and you expect blessings in the future. So in my home life, I've got a buddy that wrote the book Miracle Morning for Families. His name's Mike McCarthy. And Mike said, Matt, you got these five core values for your company, but do you have core values for your children and your family? And I said, I don't. And he's like, well, it's probably even more important because you only get 18 summers with these little kids before you launch them off for their life. And you want them to have guiding principles that you can't be there for every decision, but you could instill five values in them that would guide their decisions as they get older. So we created the O'Neill virtues, and they are be kind, be courageous, do the right thing, be healthy, and have fun. And, you know, when we live kind and brave and we're doing the right thing and we're having fun and we're making healthy choices, we feel really admirable as a family. I do as a person, right? So these are posted on our dining room wall. They're posted in all of our bedrooms, my wife and my bedroom, each of my children's bedrooms. And we talk about them. You know, when like last night, my 8-year-old, she got up on stage and sang a song while playing piano in front of her entire school. A moment of bravery, right? This is one of our core values. Like I was so like all alone on that stage, all those eyeballs looking at her, and she's an introverted girl. And like, but she was super nervous going into it. I had a lot of conversations with her about, you know, how we can use that energy to our advantage, but she did it. And now she has strengthened that muscle of bravery, and she feels so happy with herself for living according to these values. And so it's an actionable thing you could do. And people are like, well, how do I figure out what the five should be for me? And I know you have 16, I believe it's 16 values, 16 virtues. Well, 16 is great. We got to pick our top five. And when you came on my episode, I asked you your favorite five and we dove into those five because like we can't, our brains can't remember 16, you know, by heart, but we can remember five by heart. It just becomes part of our beings. I would say get Chuck's book. Look at his 16, read each chapter of all 16 and the five that just hit home with you, like that's who I want to be. Those would be the five.
Yeah. That's really one of the reasons I wrote the book was to give people a list of things that they could, you know, go through and decide, you know, which of these five things are the ones that I want to hold in most esteem and value in my life. And so by just kind of defining and diving into the meaning of the word a little bit more, I think gives them some guidelines. So thanks for a little promo there.
Well, I mean, it's true. And that, and I just loved our conversation because you know these values inside and out. And, you know, so I'll talk, you know, the day you came on the Good Mood Show, that was last Monday. I had experienced a betrayal in my business. And it was really hurtful. I found out someone I had worked with for 12 years, had gone and worked for a company that had maliciously tried to harm us, it just felt like the betrayal hurt so bad. And you came on my podcast, we had such an uplifting conversation, but the next day I was still just really bothered by this circumstance, and that we're talking about being in good moods. Well, good moods are our perspective, but sometimes somebody does something and like, it's just hard for us to understand. Yeah. How do I shift out of this? I can't just like pretend I'm okay. If I really don't feel okay on the inside, putting on a fake smile isn't going to put me in a good mood. Right. So I'll give you a few steps, because life isn't always going to go the way we think it should. Right. I can't control this girl's actions. That she made her own choice. That choice felt hurtful to me, but it was my perspective. Right. So
yeah,
my favorite tip for changing my perspective when I think someone else has done something in a way that I wouldn't approve of is Byron Katie's 4 Questions.
Mm, yeah.
Are you familiar, her work?
I love the work. Yeah.
It's the best.
Yeah.
So Byron Katie says, anytime I'm judging someone else, I have become that thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I took out a worksheet. You can go to thework.com and download this worksheet, and you write down all your judgments about the person. So I wrote the judgment of this person betrayed me. Well, we need to stick with that. And then she asks you, is it true? Did she betray you? And my answer is, yeah, she did. And the second question is, can I absolutely know it's true? And this is an interesting question, because to absolutely know that this person in her mind wanted to betray me is impossible for me to know. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, no, I can't absolutely know that her intention was to betray me. And the next question is, who are you when you think this thought, you've been betrayed? And I'm like, man, I'm super sad. I'm not happy with my kids. I'm not joyful at work. I'm really the worst version of me. The fourth question and the final question is, who would you be if this thought could disappear out of your mind? Like, you could no longer even think the thought, they betrayed you. I'm like, well, shoot, she'd been working there a couple months. I didn't even know about it. And I was having the best couple months ever. I'm like, if I was oblivious to it, I'd be amazing. Like, I'd be in the best mood ever. And this is leverage, because you're starting to see it's not the situation that hurt you. It's your perspective about the situation, right?
Right.
And so the final act is to turn around the statement and say, she didn't betray me, I'm betraying. Mm-hmm. How am I betraying me? Well, when I get all hurt with my own perspective, I'm not happy with my kids, I'm not happy at work, I'm actually sabotaging everything that's good. The other way you can turn it around is, she betrayed me. Another turnaround is, I betrayed her.
Mm-hmm.
How did I betray her? Well, shoot, if she could hear all the names I've been saying about her in my brain since I found this out, she'd be like, why would you say that? It's so hurtful.
Yeah.
So that, like, in my mind, I betrayed her back, right? Yeah. And the final turnaround is the opposite. So she betrayed me. The opposite is, she didn't betray me.
Hmm.
How didn't she betray me? And the answer to that was, she's just making the choice she thinks is best for herself. That has nothing to do with me. So as soon as I went through the work, and I shifted my perspective to see how the opposite of all the things that I thought were hurting me could also be true, it dropped it. And so by Wednesday, this happened on Monday. Tuesday, I was really upset still. By Wednesday, I was back to just feeling amazing. So yeah, some really tough things can happen in our life. We can't pretend that we're not hurt, but there are tools that we can use to just get our mind to quit obsessing about them.
You hit on something really key there, and that is, you have to make a conscious choice to work through whatever's going on in your life. And I think a lot of us, I wasn't really taught what tools. Nobody taught me how to use the work, from Byron Katie's, that process that you just took us all through. I had to learn that, later on in life, and see how that was something that I could use when, like you, hey, I'm ruminating about this thing. It's been a couple of days and it's really affecting me. what can I do here? Let's pull out a worksheet and let's work through this problem together. But that requires a conscious effort on your part to be able to be willing to do that work. And I think that is one of the key things that people don't actually recognize is these tools that are out there are there because we all essentially experience the same thing. We've all felt betrayed. We've all felt let down by somebody else, you know? And when we stay in that victim state of this is happening to me, then I'm going to go into that lower place and ruminate about all those bad things. But, you know, if I turn it around, this is happening for me. How is this happening for me? If that hadn't happened and you hadn't worked through all of that, like that's that right there, what you just described is the very definition of personal growth. So, you know, we say we want personal growth and self-help.
Careful what you ask for.
Right. You've got to actually apply the things into your life. And I love you shared that because I know you, we talked about that on your podcast.
It was so fresh. I think it happened
like right before we got on together.
Right before we got on, I just found out all this stuff. And then you and I had like the most beautiful conversation talking about the 16 virtues. Mm-hmm. And I felt amazing, like just because of your high positive energy. But then the thoughts kept creeping back in. I can't believe this happened. Like, why did this happen? But this is life. This is real life. You know, sometimes things happen and we've got a code within ourselves that says that wasn't okay. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, it's okay. It's okay for us to respect the boundaries that we have for ourselves. We don't just want to be a doormat where we're like, no matter what anybody does, it's cool with me. Yeah. Because that is what you said is a lack of integrity in the first place.
Right.
You know, so I do have boundaries. I don't want people to treat me poorly. And then when they do act in ways that I don't think are appropriate for what my standards are for people in my life, then I have to deal with the hurt and figure out how to get out of it. And that's a great tool for how to do that.
Yeah. And that's what personal responsibility is all about, is I've got to take responsibility. Even like I always, you know, kind of use an analogy, you know, if you know, you're driving down the road and car hits you, breaks your leg, all right? You're not responsible for the broken leg, but you are responsible to get yourself to the hospital, get the leg set, go through the physical therapy that you might need to so that you can get back and doing the things that you love to do. So the victim is, oh, they hit me. Somebody needs to come take care of me. I'm just going to lay here on the side of the road until somebody comes along and takes care of me. And that's just no way to live.
In Grant Cardone's book, I think it was Be Obsessed or Be Average. He said, I will never, ever, ever be a victim.
Yeah.
He said, if somebody T-bones me in my car, I caused that freaking crash.
Mm.
And he said, I will never take a stance that somebody else did anything to harm me. And that it was always on me. I could have driven better. I could have been more aware. In the end of the day, I got into a car knowing inherent risks that sometimes when you get in cars, you get into crashes. So it's always on me. I could have left earlier. You know, he's like, there was a million different things I could have done to avoid that crash. But if I go into the stance of, no, I couldn't have avoided it. It was unavoidable. It happened to me and somebody harmed me. He said, all I'm going to do is suffer thinking that somebody broke my leg. At the end of the day, you have a broken leg. It's your responsibility to go, you know, get a cast and then go through physical therapy. Mm-hmm. Like you have to do all the work anyway. So we might as well just go ahead and own it. Say, all right, I had a part in this. I chose to drive.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Another quote that I love from Byron Katie, you know, is the idea of, you know, when we argue with reality, when we argue with reality, we only lose, but every single time, you know. And the arguing with reality, I always think of that. It's like, if I'm in a bad mood, if I'm suffering, I'll just ask myself, okay, what's going on in my reality that I'm arguing with? It shouldn't be this way. It should be that way. Or they shouldn't do this. They should do that. And
she's crazy, dude. She, she, you know, the book is Loving What Is. So she just loves everything.
Yeah.
And that's that's enlightenment. So I'm not enlightened.
You know, me neither.
But she describes in her book, A Mind at Home with Itself, that she had a blender and she was like blending up a smoothie and the vegetables were stuck. And her hand went into the blades of the blender as it was spinning. And she pulls her hand out and it's just blood just gushing off of her fingers. And she said, oh, it was just so beautiful. She's in an enlightened state where absolutely everything is beautiful. And she loves all of it instantaneously. For me, I'd be like cussing off. Right. Oh my God, I just put my hand in a blender.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's also really cool to learn from great spiritual teachers like Byron Katie, who do have such a high understanding that, you know, that if you do argue with any part of reality, you're going to suffer, even putting your hand into a blender. But good point though, right? The pain, I'm sure, and the fingers and having to get them stitched up or sewn up, but you have to do all of that anyway. Deciding not to see that this is beautiful at the moment, I guess it's just going to add suffering to that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
But anyway, that story's always stuck with me because it's so freaking bizarre.
Yeah. Okay. So what's the best advice that you've ever heard about creating a life of lasting happiness?
The best advice is read 10 pages a day. The book, The Compound Effect, Darren Hardy said that you become the habits that you exercise the most. And if those are unconscious habits, then you become unconsciously who you're going to be. But the one habit he recommended the most in that book to become the version of you that was going to be the greatest version ever was to read 10 pages of self-development a day. And he's like, it's not much. It's just 10 pages. Yep. He said at the end of a month, you've read 300 pages. It's probably like 1.5 books. So every 2 months, you're reading 3 books. At the end of the year, you know, that's 18 new books. You do that for a decade. You've read 180 books. You can become anything you want to become. If you want to become happier, you could read 10 pages a day on a text on happiness. If you want to become more grateful, you can read 10 pages on gratitude. If you want to become more loving, you can read 10 pages on how to become more loving. Everything, you know, at this point, I heard this 20 years ago. At this point, I've been reading 10 pages a day for 20 straight years. Wow. The progress and the growth just never stops. And so that's the best advice I can give anyone who says, hey, I really want to be in a good mood. I say, it's super easy. It's 10 pages a day. It doesn't take a long time. 15 minutes a day, and you will fortify your mind with positivity. The converse, though, is also true. And this is the other part that Darren says. He says, the negativity that you allow into your mind with your daily habits also has an effect. So if you love watching TV shows where they bury the bodies and then they are worried about if they're going to get caught, if you love staying on the news where 80% of the programming is negative and fear-based, if you love staying on social media, again, where it's all comparison and pride, these have an effect on your subconscious. So I don't watch the news. Any scary, drama-ridden TV shows are not allowed in my home. And not because, of course, I watched them all as a kid, but at this point, I want to feel good, right? I don't want to wake up with night terrors thinking that I just killed somebody in my sleep. I have to bury the body.
Sure. Yeah. Exactly. So to sum up here, it sounds like, you know, 3 key elements would be: number one, journal in the morning, you know, write down, you know, your wins and what you're grateful for. Number two would be focus on gratitude. You know, what are the little things that you can be grateful for? And when you find yourself in a situation where you're not in a good mood, to be able to turn it around, you know, essentially practicing gratitude is a way to turn it around. Or, you know, using the work from Byron Katie was a great example of that. And then read 10 pages a day. So it seems like if I were able to journal every morning, practice gratitude in my life and all things, stop arguing with reality, and read 10 pages of self-development books every day, I'd probably be in a pretty good mood.
You definitely would be. There's no other way. Oh, I will add one more. I just said this quote the other day. The best happy pill ever created is exercise.
Mm-hmm.
Physical exercise. I interviewed a neuroscientist named Alex Korb on the Good Mood Show, and he said, you will never find somebody depressed needing happy pills who's mm-hmm. training for a marathon.
Mm-hmm.
So it's impossible, because to train for a marathon means you have to have a level of physical activity every single day. And his findings on the brain showed that it was impossible to be doing a high level of physical activity every day and also be depressed at the same time.
Mm.
And not sad, not hurt,
yeah.
but prolonged depression. It's right, you cannot right. stay in a prolonged depressed state if you're exercising daily.
Interesting. I like that. Okay. So Matt, where can people find you? Where can they listen to the Good Mood Show podcast?
Yeah, right on your favorite podcast app. Just go to Spotify or Apple or wherever you consume your podcasts and just search for the Good Mood Show. And we can keep this conversation going about how to feel good.
Yeah, I love it, man. I want to just say thanks for coming on the show. It's been a great conversation, very uplifting for me as well. And like you said at the beginning, we're kindred spirits. So it's always good to talk to you, man. So there you have it. If you want to be in a good mood, check out the Good Mood Show and be sure to like, subscribe, give a thumbs up to this channel, and I'll see you next time. If you like this episode, check out the interview I did with Speed Weed. Speed is a Hollywood TV writer and producer and has worked on shows such as Law & Order SVU, Arrow, and The Summer I Turned Pretty. Speed and I talk about the challenges of being a good man in Hollywood. I'll put a link below. You've been listening to the Nice Guy Recovery Podcast with your host, Chuck Chapman. If you're looking to take your Nice Guy Recovery deeper, be sure to check out www.chuckchapman.com to find out how you and I can squash your Nice Guy behaviors once and for all.